Thanks for joining us on Northwest Leaders and Legends, the show where we explore the ideas, the people, and the initiatives powering the Northwest economy and strengthening the communities we share. I'm your host, Jill Walters, and together we'll dig into the stories and insights shaping our region's growth with our very own Leaders and Legends. Whether you're listening on the radio, watching our videos, or tuning in through our podcast, we're glad you're here. So settle in as we dive into the forces driving our region forward. It is quite literally an honor to welcome our special guest to Northwest Leaders and Legends today. Her career reflects decades of leadership, innovation, and service to Washington's transportation system. In 2017, she received the Distinguished Leadership Award from the Design-Build Institute of America for her work on the SR 520 program. And in 2018, she was named Deputy Assistant Secretary of Mega Programs, followed by her appointment as Assistant Secretary of Urban Mobility and Access in December 2020. And in 2025, Governor Bob Ferguson appointed her to the highest transportation leadership role in our state, Washington's Secretary of Transportation. Today, we are delighted and honored to sit down with the Honorable Julie Meredith, Secretary of Transportation for the state of Washington. Secretary Meredith, it is so delightful to meet you, and thank you so much for carving time out of your busy day to be with us here at Washington's Economic Development Association's Summer Conference.
I'm really happy.
As we kick off our conversation together, I'm going to need my cheaters for this. We really want to start with an introduction about you. Secretary Meredith, very few leaders can say that they've devoted their entire professional career to one organization, let alone one responsible for multimodal transportation systems that span complex engineering disciplines, statewide connectivity, and the safety of hundreds of millions of travelers across our state every year. Your career at WASDOT has touched every corner of that work. To begin, would you give us a sense of the major areas your department oversees and the scope of your work as Washington's Secretary of Transportation?
Happy to. I do want to say that it's been an honor to work at Washington State DOT, and I've held, you know, almost every role from technician all the way through. It's been a great career. I've had so many great opportunities to do great work in the community, to build fantastic infrastructure and work with partners across not only Washington State, but the world in delivering. So really couldn't have asked for a better career and a great opportunity. But here at Washington State, our mission, we provide safe, reliable, cost-effective transportation options for people and our businesses. So that's our mission. Our mission is also to have Washington have access to all modes for all people in all our communities. And our agency has crews across the state. They work in all weather, 24/7, in good times, during holidays, and during emergencies. And we have crews that do everything from maintenance. So we have civil engineers, structural engineers, environmentalists. We have ferry captains. I love that. And we have construction technicians and many more. So we have a vast variety of people who work here. Our work is to include all of those who are affected by our work in what we do. So we do community outreach with the communities. And I think we're most successful when we're engaged with those who are impacted. Yeah. So that's been part of what we do. The other thing to notice, Washington State owns a quarter of a trillion dollar asset. It's really important and the bedrock of our economy.
Yeah.
I did want to say we manage aviation.
Yeah.
We have public transportation connections. You know, we do rail work.
Yes.
We have our facilities, our IT, our fleet, our ferries. We're multimodal.
I know.
So we have such a valuable asset, and you know, you heard us talk today at the conference about the need to maintain and preserve that system.
Yes.
And so that's what we're working with the governor and the legislature on?
Well, in December 2025, Governor Ferguson announced $2.1 billion in a transportation infrastructure package, the largest preservation investment in any enacted budget in nearly 20 years, all without raising taxes. That plan includes $1.1 billion for bridge preservation, $164 million for paving projects just this summer in 2026, $756 million for paving over the next decade, and $160 million for slope control, really needed in mountain passes and other landslide vulnerable areas, just to name a few projects. So Secretary Meredith, can you walk us through how these historic investments really came to fruition?
So it's many secretaries before me highlighted the need for preservation. So
yes.
You really come on the shoulders of those who come before you. So I just want to acknowledge that right up front.
Sure.
But when Governor Ferguson dedicated his time to learn about the transportation issues in this state, he really put a stake in the ground that said we need to invest. And he brought the legislature to the table. And really, it is through his leadership that we got the backing for the $1.5 billion. I need to add that even the governor will say this is a good start.
Sure.
The needs are far outstripped the revenue that we've got. So over the next 6 years, like you said, we're gonna pave 2,500 lane miles. We're gonna perform critical work on the 145 bridges across the state to rehabilitate them. But we know more work is gonna be needed. The governor really focused his energy on this charge. So I give him big kudos for that. Yeah. And really, the work that is so necessary got highlighted when we had to close bridges because of infrastructure needs. We had some bridge strikes last year, and it just highlighted how important it was to have reliable infrastructure for the communities.
Yeah, and looking ahead, you know, where is this funding planned to be deployed, and which communities across Washington really stand to benefit from this unprecedented focus in preservation and in safety?
Yeah, the needs are so great across the entire state. So we're gonna fund paving and bridge work across the entire state of Washington.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So this funding represents really a 34% increase in preservation investments over the next decade. And Governor Ferguson, as you said, really underscored the urgency with a simple analogy. And I found this to be just a really easy one to understand, that painting a bridge or sealing a road may not seem exciting, but it's like changing the oil or replacing the timing belt in your car. Skip the basic maintenance and you risk catastrophic failure and far higher costs down the line. I thought that was really easy to really comprehend. Why are these investments more important now than ever? And what does this level of funding really mean for the long-term health of Washington's transportation system?
So underfunding preservation puts your whole system at risk, which is where we've been for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I do want to highlight, it's not just a Washington State problem, right? It's on a national level where preservation has been sort of last to get the funding. Preservation, and Governor Ferguson said, it's not always sexy.
Right.
I've been working to get ideas on how to do that. But our economy, our public, our people really rely on the transportation network. It's the access to their jobs, to their creativity. It's what we need to go forward. And really, due to the shortfalls, we've been unable to manage the system in a state of good repair, which really means we've been unable to manage it at the lowest life cycle cost, which is the most effective, most cost-effective way to manage a system. So some work, as you said, is underway through this last budget, which is really helpful. But due to the backlog of work we have, you'll see it across the state, we're gonna have to make some tough trade-offs. So perhaps rougher pavement than people expect or desire. We'll have disruptive bridge closures if there are issues that we have to deal with that were unplanned, and that's happened in the last few years. Often today, we're working to keep the roadways open across the state rather than be proactive in our maintenance. We also know that because funding hasn't been as reliable as we need, that it's harder for our contractors and industry partners to be ready. So just like the state, they need to ramp up. They have to get the people, the equipment, the materials all in place. So once we have a reliable funding stream, our private partners can be better partners with us going forward. So less than 20% of a historic transportation budget, more than $12 billion, is dedicated this biennium to preservation. So that's going to need to change for us to get ahead of the backlog that we have in the system.
Yeah. Well, as we talk about some of the challenges, here's another topic of challenge. Tariffs continue to influence the cost and availability of key materials nationwide, especially steel and concrete and other essentials for major transportation projects. As you well know, Secretary Meredith, are these current tariffs affecting Washington's infrastructure projects? And if so, what kinds of impacts have you and your teams had to navigate as a result of the rising costs?
Well, it's well documented that costs are rising.
Yeah.
It's just difficult right now to attribute exactly what is causing the costs and tariffs being, you know, part of that. And how much they're affecting our costs. You can look at industry reports, price index. It's true there are tariffs on steel, copper, aluminum, all materials we use in our industry. The Association of General Contractors has produced data and reports that reflect increasing costs in our material products. Tariffs is a part of that.
Sure.
The precise impact of it is really difficult for us to isolate. There are other factors that go into the costs. So labor costs are going up.
Sure.
We have policies that are changing. We look at risks that are going up. We also, in many areas, have competing projects with other programs. Like Sound Transit has a big program, we have a big program, and so we're all competing for the same contractors or the same labor. So all of that feeds into what ultimately the project price is. So again, it's really hard to isolate one little piece at this moment.
Sure. Well, I know that we have so much more to cover in the second half of our conversation with you, but I'm looking up at our time, and I know that we're up against a break, so if you would kindly stay exactly right where you are, and we will be right back after a short break here on Northwest Leaders and Legends, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Northwest Leaders and Legends here on KXRW 99.9 FM with your host, Jill Walters. We will return to our programming after a message from our partners.
Have you always wanted to buy a washing machine and support affordable housing at the same time? Well, now you can at the Clark County Habitat for Humanity store. They have furniture, appliances, building materials, rugs, paint, flooring, tile, and tons of other new and gently used items. Every purchase supports home building projects right here in Clark County. You can donate your own things too. Or better yet, you can call 360-213-1313. That's 360-213-1313. And they'll come pick them up from your home. The Clark County Habitat for Humanity store is located on Southeast 2nd Street near the corner of Mill Plain and I-205. They have everything and the kitchen sink.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project pays for the reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues, in print and online, including housing, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morrell Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morrell Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop that since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morrell Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morrellinc.com. That's M-O-R-E-L-I-N-K.com.
You're tuned in to Northwest Leaders and Legends here on KXRW 99.9 FM with your host, Jill Walters. We now return to our programming and conversation in progress.
And we are back from our break with the Honorable Julie Meredith, who is our Washington State's Secretary of Transportation, for the second half of our conversation with her today. And as we pick back up in our conversation, rail in Washington serves two distinct purposes. It provides reliable, affordable inner city passenger travel through Amtrak Cascades, and it also moves freight for agriculture and for manufacturing across a corridor that's absolutely essential to our state's economy. Secretary Meredith, let's take a moment to clarify, if we could, this partnership and how it works. It's a really unique three-way partnership, with WASDOT owning the trains, and then Amtrak operating the service day-to-day, and then BNSF controlling most of the track. So can you help our listeners understand how the WASDOT, Amtrak, and BNSF work together, and how service levels along the corridor are really determined?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer the last question first.
Okay. Yes.
So decisions about capital improvements and expansion, they require significant amounts of planning with all the partners that you suggested.
Yeah.
Right? They all have to be there. So our state rail plans are data-driven. We look at, like, among the other things we look at our ability to support the service based on the ridership projections. We include community engagement in our planning processes, and we integrate the rail plans with the other state plans across the system. Our plans provide a blueprint for how we're going to operate and maintain the system over the next 20 years or so. And great news, the state rail plan is currently updating their plans and going to come out for public comment later this summer. So be sure everybody looks at it.
Yes, we will.
As for passenger and freight service, you're right, it gets complicated, and there are a lot of parties at place.
Yeah.
So we work with our partners to deliver the Amtrak Regional Passenger Train Service. WASDOT and Oregon Department of Transportation, we partner to sponsor the service. Okay. So it's a good partnership, including paying the costs and owning some of the trains and locomotives.
Okay.
Amtrak runs the service. So it also runs the two national train routes within Washington State, but the railroads, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, the Union Pacific, they own the tracks and they dispatch the trains, both the passenger trains and the freight trains. So I do want to note that we have 8 new train sets coming and 2 additional locomotives. And I did get to walk the new trains a little while ago, and I think people will be very excited to see the trains come. For the freight trains, most of those are handled by the private railroads. That's okay. their route. WASDOT does own the longest short rail line. So that's a 300-mile line. It's the PCC line, so it's the Palouse-Cooley City line. So that runs through 5 counties in eastern Washington, and it helps get the agricultural products from the rural areas to the larger areas and ultimately out to the world through the ports. So we contract with private railroads to run those lines, and we're working on capital investments to allow for increased speeds and safety along those corridors. So we also manage a grant program and a loan program. So those programs are available for improvements on the privately owned lines. So right now we have applications that are due this summer for $7 million in grants and $5 million in loans.
Amazing. Amazing. One of the listener questions that I wanted to bring to you, we received when we had Kurt Fredrickson on, introducing the new Aero fleet that'll be coming at the end of 2026 and 2027. And our listener was really very keen about the federal budget. And here is this individual's question. President Trump's fiscal 2027 budget proposal includes an 82% reduction in passenger rail funding and a 23% reduction in public transit funding. So these are just proposed cuts and not the enacted budget. And we did verify those figures through the American Public Transportation Association. So Secretary Meredith, how are you anticipating any potential reductions in federal rail and in transit funding?
Yeah. Those are good questions.
Yeah.
I think the thing to notice that the president's budget is an important policy statement.
Okay.
All presidents get to make that. Every president has. And it serves as a starting point for the congressional appropriations process. This administration makes a proposal, and then Congress can, in lots of instances, does make a different approach.
Sure.
So it'll be a negotiation going forward. So at the same time annual appropriations are being discussed, we're coming up on the expiration of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. I always have to remember that. It's the IIJA, so there's a lot of words.
A lot of letters.
So we're following the congressional budget process really closely. We're relying on the five-year reauthorization of this bill to provide a long-term predictable funding cycle for us. Substantial reductions in passenger rail and transit would really affect Washington State's system negatively. We wouldn't be able to deliver the robust public transportation system that we have come to really rely on in this state. So if Amtrak loses significant federal funding, its organization is going to really struggle and be at risk for delivering on the contracts that we have with them. So we're following the process closely.
Sure.
Budget proposals, by their very nature, they're going to create uncertainty. It happens on the state level. It's happening on the federal level. Our teams are managing the things that we can, the things we're responsible for. So we're going to continue to responsibly plan our work, manage the resources, and we're going to work with our federal and state partners so that we're ready to move forward regardless of what the decisions are.
Yeah, and that really leads into sort of my next question is, and really more broadly, how do you navigate, you know, the tension and the pressure that the national budget shifts can place on your agency's long-term planning and project delivery? That's got to be a really fine line to navigate.
The challenge is keeping your teams focused on the things they can control while the decision makers are doing their process. But it's not unlike what we go through every year on the budgeting cycle on the state level. And so you have to manage and deliver what you have and keep track of what's coming down the pipeline.
Sure. Well, I'd like to shift a little bit to Washington's historic ferry investment. So Washington State is the home of the largest ferry system in the United States and the second largest in the world for vehicles carried, with more than 20 million, I didn't know million, riders in 2025. Incredible. Full domestic service is considered 18 of the 21 vehicle fleet in the water at any time. And the 2019 WSF long range plan, which we can talk about, also projects nearly 30% ridership growth by 2040, which, combined with the age of the fleet and our state's climate commitment goals, really helps explain why the state's $6 billion plan for new hybrid electric ferries and shoreside terminal electrification are really truly historic. So, Secretary Meredith, how would you describe, as I've led all that up to this question, the significance of this investment? And can you walk us through what Washington's ferry system will look like with the new vessels that are going to be coming online and modernizing?
Yeah. You know, the future fleet will be newer, more reliable, and increasingly hybrid electric.
Yeah.
Our long-range plan, as you know, is to get 16 new hybrid vessels. That'll allow us to retire some of the oldest vessels in our fleet. It also will allow us to do routine maintenance that is absolutely necessary for the vessels. They operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the routine maintenance could occur without disrupting service. So that would be remarkable for our system.
Yeah.
Washington's marine highway system, as you know, is going to carry those 26 million passengers in 2040. But I also want to note, it's a vital lifeline for people to get to their jobs, to get to their doctor's appointments, their schools, and do commerce across the region. So the $6 billion program represents a proactive, long-term, sustained system for generations to come. The $1.68 billion that we have that's secured, we're modernizing for the future. It's going to be a phased transition. So key vessels we have, like the Olympic class, 160-car ferry system we have, We're going to use those ones for decades ahead. So we're going to maintain and operate those alongside the hybrid vessels that we're having. But building the new 160 auto hybrid fleet allows us to standardize the fleet, which helps us simplify crew training, streamlines our parts management, which is an important part of maintaining the system, and it'll improve our long-term reliability. Electrification that we're proposing system-wide, we're going to integrate that into our vessels, our terminals. We're working with utilities to install rapid charging at up to 16 terminals. This allows the ship to top off power within the 15 to 20 minutes where we're just parked for loading. The thing that the riders will notice and what they'll see is a quieter ride and less diesel fumes. So that's what riders will note. It's pretty exciting. If you haven't ridden the Wenatchee, I encourage you to ride the Wenatchee and you can experience that. So this program that you're talking about with clean tech innovation, yeah. It's going to dramatically reduce the 19 million gallons that we use of diesel fuel each year. So it's proven to work. You can see it on the Wenatchee. And even without the shore charging that we're implementing, the converted vessel, the Wenatchee, it's reducing fuel consumption on the Seattle-Bainbridge route already today. So when implemented, this electrification will cut our greenhouse emissions from the Washington State ferries by more than 90%. And I just want to remind you that the state's largest emitter of greenhouse gases comes from our marine transport. So it's just transform the industry right there. And also the natural beauty that we count on, this investment will help protect that in Washington State.
Incredible. Incredible. Well, this is the ferry system is such an incredible decades and decades long project to come. But I want to do a little review, if we can, of what we just experienced over this past summer in June and July, and how really WASDOT performed during the FIFA World Cup. So as we really wrapped the festivities in and around the FIFA World Cup experience, Washington's transportation system supported hundreds of thousands of visitors traveling through Seattle and really other cities across the state. The Sound Transit reported the highest ridership in its history, and every mode, highways, ferries, transit, and airports operated really at peak demand. So have you received sort of a post-event analysis on how our transportation system performed at one of the, you know, largest events that our state has ever hosted? Incredible.
We're still spiking the ball on the World Cup, on the region. It really demonstrated partnership across the Puget Sound region. And WASDOT's role in that was really a supporting role. Yeah. The City of Seattle and the FIFA Local Organizing Committee, they led the event planning around transportation, especially around the stadiums, security and safety. So that was great. But we have great partnerships with those people. Yeah. The other thing that the region is really, really fortunate is that the stadiums in Seattle are located close to the core of downtown, with access to the ferry system and good transit access. So if you wanted to roll, you wanted to ride transit, you wanted to use the ferry to get there, you could do it. And you could tell people did. Yeah. And you can see it in the numbers for the transit. Yeah. Lumen Field is such a great place for bus, rail, and ferry. It's just location, location. Yeah. Our agency ran, as you know, the largest ferry system in the country. And we did a great job planning for that work to get people there, to get them across the city and into the stadiums. Yes. I think the key to it is the coordination that was done, and the 2 years of planning that led up to it was really critical to tie the safety and security, which required more road closures than normal to get people through the gates and through the check-in points. So all of that allowed us to have better opportunity to coordinate with Seattle Department of Transportation and the emergency service providers at Washington State Patrol, Seattle Fire, and Seattle Police. So that was great. But to get to the lessons learned, I think the first one that comes out of the box is that planning for the unknown is really hard.
Oh,
Sure.
We did not know how many people were going to show up to go to the games or explore the city as a part of it, nor did we know how many people would avoid the area because World Cup was there, who weren't interested in World Cup. Yeah. Then how many people are going to stay around and explore after the events? That was unknown. We had to make educated guesses and plan around those.
Yeah.
So luckily, the 2 years planning paid off.
Yes, it did.
I think the other thing to think about, and I said this a little bit, location, location, location. We were really lucky in that we had good transit access, the ferries were close by, and you could walk to the event. Lumen Field was planned perfect for that. Not so in all the events, or in fact, Dallas and Kansas City had to have temporary transit connections to get to the games and to support those modes. I hear they did a good job, but we had ours already in place, so we're really fortunate. Partnerships were key. We have great partnerships with our transit partners, with the city, we have good partners with the stadium, people who run the stadiums. All of that came into play here. It wasn't just that day, it was years of partnership leading to it and practice. Yeah. So before this, we had the Seahawks Super Bowl. Yeah, shout out to the Seahawks.
Yes.
And we had the Major League Baseball game there. And before that, we had Club World Cup here. So we were practicing and planning for this event. So we were tied in WashDOT. We relied on our internal policies and practices. I, in fact, sat in our emergency operations center to see how it functioned and performed, and we did it really well. And we used it as a training opportunity to get more people engaged in this type of event. And because I believe this won't be the last event here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that Women's World Cup in 2030-31, maybe we have a shot at hosting that. And I'd be ever
we
so
sure
excited.
We sure have a good template, don't we?
Yes.
We do.
I would be, and I
we
love soccer, so I'd be really excited for the women to
we
bat.
Do. I am too, and we are hopeful. And I cannot believe a conversation with you has flown by in just a snap of the finger. But really, as we start concluding our time and our conversation together, which I'm already sad about, we'd love to hear really your broader reflections on Washington's transportation system, its potential, its future, and the opportunities you really see for our state.
Yeah. Well, it's an exciting time in Washington, and I think the thing that I think about when I think about Washington and what's been the most impactful for me in my job since I've been here is all the people.
Yeah.
I started the job, and the first year out was an adventure in storms and trying to keep the roads open for the public. And really, not only did our teams rally to open those roadways in an expedited fashion, but so did the community and the private industry, just to get the roads back open in a safe and effective manner. And we're working with those groups in order to, you know, put them back in the shape they were before the storms happened. Through our response, through the fires that we have, our teams have really risen to the occasion to support emergency providers. So that's pretty inspirational for me to see. It's also an exciting time as we think about how our transportation system started in the 1950s and where is it going to go in the next 50 or 100 years. And so we have such a great opportunity to think about how do we want our communities to grow? How do we plan for the future when we know millions more are going to come to this beautiful location? And so we've been working with our partners on an I-5 master plan. And that master plan goes from Canada to Oregon. And we look at that wonderful resource that we have. How do we maintain it? But more importantly, how do we want it to grow and function in the future?
Yeah.
How do we want our communities to connect to it? Yeah. What kind of modes are part of it? And we've also been working on a parallel sort of path to look at Cascadia High-Speed Rail.
Right.
That's a partnership with Vancouver, British Columbia. Yeah. And Oregon, and so how would a rail line partner potentially, should the region choose, with an I-5 function, and how do we implement something like that? I think that's an exciting time for us to explore with the communities along I-5.
The future is so bright for our transportation system, and so bright that you joined us today on our show. We are beyond delighted that you carved out time in your schedule. Secretary Meredith, we are so thankful. As we conclude with you today, we hope you'll be able to come back with us again for another conversation. But to all of you who have watched, thank you so much for joining us on Northwest Leaders and Legends today. We are sending warm Northwest wishes to you and your communities. A special thank you to our producer, Michael Sarno, who makes our show possible. And please make sure that you share this so that we can continue our discussions with all of these incredible leaders in our communities. And we are sending our thanks to all of you. And we will be back with another special guest in the future episodes. So stay tuned. And for now, thank you so much. And bye for now. Bye. Thank you for spending a bit of your day with us today, and I hope today's show brought insight and value to you. If you'd like to listen again to our show, please visit kxrw.fm, where you can find this show and other wonderful ones just like it online for your listening pleasure. Also, if you're feeling generous, please click on the big donate button as contributions continue to help our volunteer-based station here. We look forward to seeing you again here on Northwest Leaders and Legends.